Hello, everybody. Thank you very much for downloading this week's edition of the Click podcast. Now, you may remember last week we were talking about green computing, the environmental impact of computing. And Michael McLaughlin on Google Plus was listening to the show. He was taking a little walk, listening to the podcast as he walked through the residential neighbourhoods of Denver in Colorado. And it got him thinking. He said, you know, whereas the electrified internet with its infrastructure of networks, computers and servers does use energy, it also provides for offsetting our use of energy. He talks about telecommuting, for instance. You know, no need to drive to work five times a week, or teleconferencing, so you don't need to fly or travel to lots of conferences. Nice thought there, Michael. Thank you very much. Now, we've got some good news and some bad news. The bad news is there is no bill this week. What a shame. But the good news is we have a brilliant replacement, Jamila Knowles. Jamila is going to be joining us in the live edition of the programme as well. Just very quickly, Jamila, tell us about Outriders. This is your podcast and show on Radio 5 Live, isn't it?
It is indeed. It's a programme that is about the people who do cool things with electric, I guess, very, very broadly, but connected to the web or, you know, electronics, that sort of thing. We're not that different.
All right. Now, Jamila is a person with many views, as you're about to hear, because we're going to be talking about gaming and we're going to be talking about robotics. Here comes this week's programme. Hello again, everyone. I'm Gareth Mitchell, and this is Click. Today, do video games affect our behaviour? Listener Floyd Kennedy on Twitter says that adverts do, or they wouldn't make them. TV affects us, or we wouldn't watch it. Games, likewise, must be linked to brain function. But Belinda Palmer says the idea is propaganda by people who know nothing about games. Well, whatever you think, researchers think they may now have a few more answers. Also today, I meet the robot that has been capturing hearts and minds. Now, this programme goes out live, or the first edition of this programme anyway, is live at 19:30 GMT on a Tuesday. Thereafter, you may be listening to us on demand or through a repeat broadcast. Now, Bill can't be with us for this week. I think he's been travelling. He's just on his way back. But thank goodness we have Jamila Knowles instead. Now, Jamila is a writer. She's a broadcaster. She's a blogger. And she also presents Outriders on the BBC domestic network, Radio 5 Live. Welcome to Click, Jamila. Thank you very much for standing in for Bill.
No problem. Thank you, Gareth.
So we're going to be hearing your views on all the stories in the programme today, including this one, how playing video games, that does affect your brain. Now, that is the conclusion of a study that's just out by a team in the United States. The work falls short of saying that games make players more violent, but the research does suggest that for a while after gaming, players are relatively desensitized to violence. Now, this is all based on brain scans of volunteers who engaged in extended brutal gaming for a week. They were compared to gamers who'd played no such titles. Now, this relatively small study was presented at a conference of brain imaging experts last week. Delegates heard how the emotional response to violence was tested by presenting the test subjects with violent words. So how did they respond? One of the study's authors, Tom Hummer, assistant professor of psychiatry at Indiana University in Indianapolis, has been telling me more.
They looked at violent words and they looked at nonviolent words. And there's a region of the brain called the prefrontal cortex, which is active when you're trying to control emotions and control aggressive behaviors. And in this task, when they see the violent words, they're just supposed to press a button that corresponds to what color it is. To control their automatic emotional response, the prefrontal cortex is active. Now, following a week of playing the violent video game, we found that that prefrontal cortex activity was decreased in the group that didn't play, that just continued on with their normal lives. The prefrontal cortex was just as active as it was before.
That decrease in the activity in the prefrontal cortex, that was tied up, what, with a lack of empathy, was it then? A lack of, I suppose, adverse reaction to violent words and thoughts?
Well, it's hard to say specifically that they had sort of an adverse reaction. It may be that either they have a decreased ability to control the emotional response from those words, or perhaps that the violent words don't have as high a violent feel to them after they've played a game that consists of shooting people for 10 hours over the previous week.
What are you concluding from this? Are you now saying definitively, right, there you go, that is evidence, you know, violent games actually do lead to violent behavior, maybe?
I think this provides sort of a first step saying that this area of the brain, which is important for controlling emotions, may be impacted by playing a game that is violent. And in these healthy individuals, there might not be overt behavioral effects, but when you see individuals who are more vulnerable, perhaps teens or people who already have troubles controlling emotions, already have sort of difficulties in prefrontal cortex, then when you have impaired ability of the prefrontal cortex to act, then there might be more behavioral problems and trouble controlling emotions or aggressive behaviors.
So it's very hard, isn't it, to extrapolate out. I mean, for obvious reasons, you can't just keep these tests going for months and months and years and years. But it's difficult to extrapolate out. And then especially when you're talking about a relatively small group of people, you know, so 28 people took part in the study overall. It's not a particularly big group and not over a particularly great amount of time.
You sort of have to fit it in with the larger scope of research that has showed that longitudinally, kids who watch more violent TV as kids are more aggressive adults. But, you know, that's not an experimental study. And there's studies showing that if you play a violent game for half an hour, you have effects that are more causal. But on this framework, the most we can do is have subjects play for a week or have them play for 2 weeks and try to draw out our conclusions from there.
As for the link between violent video games and behavior, is there wider literature around this? In other words, is yours the first study to come up with this kind of conclusion from MRI scans?
Yes. We've shown short-term effects of playing a video game. We have also shown an association between a reduced prefrontal brain activity in individuals who partake in a lot of violent media. This latest study combines those two, that the violent video game may actually be causing some of these changes in brain activity.
Tom Hummer. Well, Christian Moore, he responded to this. I was asking Twitter what people thought about all this earlier on. He says, well, this is absolute rubbish. He said video games are an escape. You know, I play shoot 'em up, so I then don't go and shoot up the nearest supermarket. What about you then, Jamila? Did you at least welcome the fact that a bit of research is being done into all this?
I absolutely welcome the fact that there is some research coming into this. And quite rightly, to hear the scientists there saying it's not actually a definitive answer, it's the beginnings of something. And after seeing such, you know, huge headlines in the media saying that video games do or do not have an effect, they never seemed to quite have that kernel of proof that we needed.
Are you persuaded by the fact that these subjects were put in MRI scanners, for instance?
Well, I feel that maybe that should be a part of wider testing. The MRI test will, of course, show up different ways in which the brain is working, but it depends also on how the outward reaction is of a person as well. So psychological testing may actually work hand in hand with the MRI.
Yeah, because it does seem like it was a small cohort, and for obvious reasons, they could only test these people for a relatively short amount of time. So it's very hard, isn't it, to extrapolate from this and to say anything definitive about the long-term effects of playing violent games.
And I think also, I mean, whether it's violent video games or whether it's a different format, what we also didn't see, whether it was childlike games or surreal games, whether people come out a little bit differently after immersion in that field as well.
Okay, now another person working on all this actually is Angelica Ortiz de Gortari of Nottingham Trent University in the UK. In fact, she's been studying an effect called game transfer phenomena. So this, in other words, is where behaviour from games might be spilling over into people's non-gaming lives. So let's hear from her live now. First of all, your reaction to what you've just heard, Angelica?
Well, I think that human behaviour is very complex. And definitely there is a study that suggests that there is some change in the brain, and playing video games, especially violent video games, is a very emotional experience. But for this to say that these changes can be permanent and can be translated into real life in a specific behavior, that we are talking about violence or crime, is, I think, it's a long way to go. Is we should not generalize, and there is many factors involved.
And you've done, obviously, research of your own. You've been looking into this idea of game transfer phenomena. I explained it briefly in my introduction. You can probably do a better job than me. So what do you mean by that term?
Yeah, Gentoo Phenomena is an area study that explores how video game experiences are transferred to the real world. And these have different, manifest in different ways, like visually, auditory, in behaviors, and in thoughts, for example. We have players that have report, for example, see health bars or text boxes above people's head. They have players also that experience some kind of automatic thought where they want to do the same thing that they do in the video game when they encounter some real-life stimulus that they associate with the video game experience. But in the most of the cases, players repress these impulses and don't perform the actions.
Yeah, because your research involved essentially questioning lots of gamers. And for instance, you had some of them saying that after playing Guitar Hero for a while, they could see everything appeared to be moving up, you know, a bit like those staves and notes on the game. So that's a real, I suppose, indication, or you might read it as an indication, that that experience from the game is spilling over into kind of normal everyday consciousness outside playing the game.
Well, we have some experience that are just like optical illusions, that in this case with Guitar Hero. And there is other cases where really the real-life stimulus are triggering these associations. And then there are other mechanisms involved in this experience. But players this experience occurs for a very short period of time in the most of the cases. And they are associated with very intensive sessions on game playing.
Right, so that suggests that these may not be particularly, you know, durable effects. So if somebody just has a, as many of us do, I mean, let's just be real about this. Loads of people, especially, you know, we're coming up to a holiday season, people are going to be spending hours playing games, and it might, you know, just affect their normal kind of waking consciousness a little bit. But a couple of days away from the games, back into the real world, presumably our minds are just going to clip back into the way they normally operate.
Yeah, it depends on the individual. You know, sometimes there are experiences that occur just in one occasion, but in another time there are, you know, we do association with everything. And in some occasions, these players say that every time they encounter this real-life stimulus, they have this kind of urge to do things as in the video game. But it's just some kind of, it lasts like a seconds. And is no more, but we don't know really is the psychological implications of this phenomena and how is the if there is some long term effects.
Okay, well, Angelica Ortiz de Gotari, thank you very much for joining us on that. This is Click. We are on air, online, and we're podcasting from the BBC in London. Now, if you're listening to this on the radio, then this time tomorrow is Health Check, and they're looking at the state of maternal health in Sierra Leone. Right then, so what happens when you bring together a whole hall full of some of the world's most advanced robots, along with their very bright creators? Well, in the case of the Science Museum in London, you end up with the Robotville Festival. Now, this was a four-day event that took place last week. The invites arrived at the Click production office, and guess who was the first to snap them up? Right, so we've literally just turned up here to Robotville EU at the Science Museum. I'm literally metres away from a whole room full of robots. But before plunging in, let's check out Paulina Latham from the Polish Cultural Institute in London. She's the creator of all this. So is there anything that you are specifically trying to say about robots here? Are you trying to remind us that they are as much cultural as they are technological, for instance?
I start to see a lot of similarities between robotics and art and culture. So, for instance, we have some examples of the hands in Robotville. In the Renaissance, the painters were fascinated with hands. Now robots are trying to recreate the hands, and they found that hands are very difficult to replicate and to mimic. Apparently the thumb is the most illogical part of body in terms of engineering. But also what is interesting with other robots, when you think about the way we think and recognize things, is very complicated.
I guess you're also interested in the way that robots interact with human beings, because the idea from fiction in many cases has been the remote, often actually quite menacing, cyborg. And yet a lot of what seems to be going on these days around robot research is coming up with robots that empathise with us. Are you interested in exploring that as well?
Well, I must admit that I fall in love when I saw iCub, which is here on the exhibition, and I'm completely smitten by the way it looks. I want to take it home.
And now into the exhibition itself, and this is the robot that Paulina has just been raving about. This is the iCub. Its companion is
Giorgio Metta from Italian Institute of Technology.
iCub, I'd say, is about the size of a child, maybe 7-year-old child, and I can immediately see what Bellino was falling in love with, because it has these incredibly intricate hands, you know, the full digits, stands autonomously on 2 feet, but also has a pair of these incredibly vivid eyes. You really do feel that iCub is establishing eye contact with you. It's remarkable.
The hands are, as you said, very sophisticated, and the reason we wanted to be able to do manipulation. The ability to grasp, touch, and explore objects is how the robot gains knowledge. The robot can interact with you, as you've seen right now.
Can I try it?
Yes, of course.
Oh, excellent. I've now got a red ball, and iCub is fixing me with these incredible eyes, and melting my heart, actually, and almost pleading with me to give her the ball, and reaching out with these beautifully fine fingers. Let's put it in your hand over there, then, iCub. Yay! Oh, drop the ball. This seems remarkable because I really do want to be the rational technology reporter here, and I know that we're talking about algorithms, and this is a wonderfully engineered hulk of circuit boards and servos and sensors, and I get all that, and yet I still want to engage emotionally with iCub. Is that part of the program as well, then, to think about how we interact with robots?
Part of the work that we're doing is also about interaction. So on one hand, for people to accept the robots, so if the robots are useful, they need also to be accepted. On the other hand, people provide hints for the robot to learn, so it's good if the interaction is as natural as possible. This is the reason we designed the skin that is sensorized, so the robot can feel when somebody is touching it. We have a face to engage people naturally.
We look at the technology as the other, something to be afraid of, but actually we are using technology every day and we don't think about it. When I look at the little joints, there are perfectly crafted. When I look at the face, it's got a very sweet face, which I'm sure psychologists did a lot of tests. Children especially, their eyes appear bigger to kind of make themselves more friendly. But for me, what I love is beautiful finish and the craftsmanship, so beautiful.
Paulina Latham, clearly absolutely in love, Jamila, with iCub. But it does make me wonder, I mean, why it's so important to try and make these robots humanoid? Does that bother you as well?
I think it does bother me. And it bothers me in a way that I also like to think about artificial intelligence, is that why does it have to be human? And certainly there are cases of robotics where there is a non-human shape, like a companion like Ibo, like a dog. So it could in fact be anything you like, but still just as clever.
Do you find this a good way of learning more, I suppose, about human-robot interactions?
I think so. And how people react with things like iCub are especially important about the threshold where people accept machines into their lives. And obviously iCub is adorable, but there are very specific psychological reasons for that, and the way the face is made and how large the eyes are, and making it not very threatening.
Because you were at that Robotville event as well. I mean, there was just so much there as well. You know, some real amazing technology. And we heard Paulina talking about the craftsmanship. So beautiful, she described it. What especially jumped out at you, apart from iCub maybe?
I was actually struck by what was more an application, really. I know that they had a Pleo robot there, which is a sort of soft toy dinosaur. But that wasn't the focus of the display. It was the fact that you could take Pleo's character or the programming and then run it on a phone to play games if the batteries in the robot had run down. And the way it was being explained to us was that its soul was being transferred. Mm. And that was quite a curious idea.
Yeah, that's a heavy concept. Well, Jamila Knowles, thank you very much indeed for joining us now on Click on the TV. They're looking at establishing broadband in rural areas this week. More details, bbc.com/click. Well, I'm Gareth Mitchell. The producer is Colin Grant. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye. There you go. That was the programme. Lots of controversial stuff in it as well. And I'm delighted to say that Angelica has stayed behind as well. Angelica, one thing that I didn't quite have time to ask you in the programme is how surprised you were by some of these results. You know, because your research, as we were hearing, it was based on questionnaires with a clutch of gamers there. Did anything particularly stand out for you, shock you, surprise you? I don't know.
I was not aware that it was a very common phenomena. So when I started to research about, I was not expecting that I will find too many experience. And what is very interesting is that different players around the world have offered a similar experience in the same games.
Because part of your research looked at violence and aggression, for instance. I mean, that was one of the subcategories that you were looking at, that you were framing questions around in your research. And for instance, you had some people saying bits and pieces about Grand Theft Auto. And I thought that was quite interesting, this point scoring system that pertains to, you know, knocking people down or stealing vehicles in Grand Theft Auto. And that lingered in some gamers' minds even after the gaming experience, didn't it?
Yeah, this is in fact very common. I mean, I have seen this in among many other players. So it seems very common in, you know, infrequent players or that play this game. They have reported this in many occasions. And but my study was not focused on violent video games. It was just analyze the content of this experience, because again, the phenomena is interested in understand the effects of video games. And since we are now dealing not with just abstract pieces, and we are doing real life actions in video games that can be transferred to the real world, then this is why it was interesting to take in consideration this player's experience.
And Jamila, I'm sure a lot of these discussions are coming about because gaming is so immersive. We obviously have these, you know, gesture-based control systems like the Kinect, obviously, those kinds of things. So this is, of all the times to be talking about this, we're getting to that point of really immersive gaming, aren't we?
I think we are. And, you know, you can lose time, you can lose sensibility of where you are. But then again, it also makes me think about those times when you lose yourself in a book.
Absolutely. And watching a film, because maybe I'm the only one. You know, here's an admission to make on the podcast to thousands of people. But there will be times. I was watching Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, a film obviously about spying in the 1970s. And I came out of the cinema, and for about 5 or 10 minutes afterwards, I was looking over my shoulder. I was, you know, I thought, am I being followed? Part of me felt as if I was a secret agent. And I've had similar emotional engagements after watching films that are so immersive. You walk out and you feel as if you're part of the diegesis, the story world of that film. Please tell me I'm not the only one.
Please. There's a tumbleweed.
Huge silence there. Thank you for supporting me in that. Angelica, rescue me here. Is anybody looking into this into films? Does anybody want to recruit me as a slightly freaky
No,
subject?
I don't think so. You are the only one. Definitely no. But something different what is with video games is that, I mean, in video games imply the repetition. You know, you do things many times. And usually you play video game for long periods of times. And in this way, you learn to respond in certain ways to things. I mean, we see in the game traffic phenomenon that players respond to real-life stimulus in the same way that they do it in the video games. They see buildings, they are climbing buildings in the video games. When they see buildings in real life, they have this kind of urge that they want to do it. They don't do it, but they experience this kind of automatic thought. I mean, it's more than imagination. Or, for example, some players, when specifically with violent video games, they have when they stop playing the video game, they feel some kind of more alert, kind of hypervigilant, where they have some kind of they start to put more attention to sounds, to hear their own breathing. But this, in this case, happened, you know, right away when they stop playing. So, of course, it's due to this video game immersion, and they start to have this kind of experience as when you are in real life danger situation. But the difference with movies and video games is the repetition and the long sessions that really disconnect you from the real world. But this don't happen to everybody. I mean, we don't know yet what are the psychological profiles of these players that are most susceptible to game traffic phenomena. But not everybody have this, you know, this tendency to get very immersed in the fantasy world.
Okay, I'm really immersed in this, but I think we might have to call it a day. Just before I go, Ren Reynolds on Twitter says that the use of functional MRI in those studies that we were talking about at the top of the programme, quite problematic. Did they test against another stimulating activity? And it does seem, as we heard there in the programme, that they compared it to people who hadn't been playing computer games. But I mean, one thing I wondered as well, actually, is how much they profiled the people taking part in this test. For instance, you know, had some of them had maybe, you know, violent past or something? How much did they question them about previous life experiences, not just their gaming? So lots of questions coming around from that study. And O. Stevens, also on Twitter, says that I think it's important this is about violent video games. Specifically, are there similar studies, for instance, watching violence on TV? So much to say, so much more to say. So please keep those messages and thoughts coming in. In the meantime, though, thank you very much to Angelica and for Jamila for standing in so well for Bill Thompson this week. I will see you next week. Bye-bye.